is the deal with senatorial candidate Roy Moore, Judge Roy Moore, in Alabama? I've heard snide comments made, really actually quite scathing comments made about the people of Alabama. It's the kind of stuff, and this is on liberal radio and even some mainstream radio, the kind of stuff that I really don't want to repeat. And because they still support Roy Moore, even though I think at this point his poll numbers are down as of today. And what my thoughts are on that is that maybe, I don't know if this is a phenomena of these sorts of accusations not having an impact, or whether it's people who support his policies and his politics. I would suspect the latter. And it kind of reminds me of how after accusations of rape and several serial accusations of sexual molestation and abuse, and not those that happened 40 years previous, but including one that even happened, or even I think more than one, that occurred in the White House, President Bill Clinton's poll numbers were way up. He left office more popular than ever. Why? Not because people approved of his seedy sex life, but because people supported his policies. And I think the same phenomena is occurring with Roy Moore. It is his policies and his positions on issues that's resonating to the degree that people are willing to look the other way regarding his sexual past. And apparently he does have a sexual past. That's not exactly up and up. I mean, I think that that's true. Let's see. There's some problems with my YouTube. It's interesting to me how it is that those who are the purveyors and the practitioners and the enablers of the sexual revolution get away with it, to the most part, except the most egregious cases if they have to. And yet, those who are professing Christians and conservatives who might occasionally lapse into immoral behavior are immediately, instantly denounced. And their careers are destroyed. Why is that? Now, first of all, as far as Roy Moore is concerned, I think we need to just briefly do a thumbnail on what's happened up until this minute. And I'm not suggesting that there may not be more things that might come out. But the way I see it here is that the accusations being made are on events that had happened 40 years ago when Roy Moore had just come out of the military. He was probably before he became a Christian, I would suggest, or before he was born again. And, you know, he was kind of typical of, frankly, some of the less constrained times that have emanated from the sexual revolution of the 1960s and 70s. We're all affected by that, including conservatives. I'm not saying this to excuse it. But from a legal standpoint, the statute of limitations, even in Massachusetts, and this is after a new law was passed, by the way, extending the statute of limitations for such charges, it ends after 35 years. So if you've waited over 35 years to bring charges of sexual impropriety, then it's too late. The statute of limitations ran out. So from a legal standpoint, there's nothing going on here. Also from a legal standpoint, putting aside the morals, which are not great, by the way, three of the five women who have filed charges were of legal age at the time that they had they were dating Roy Moore. They were 16 and up, and that's legal in Alabama. Now, I'm not here to defend that. Do I think it was appropriate that a 30-year-old man was dating 16-year-old girls? No, I don't. I think it was creepy, frankly. But it was legal. He didn't do anything. It was not rape. And first of all, secondly, he didn't have sex with these women, these young women. I mean, he might have kissed them, yes, but he didn't go beyond that. And there was nothing that was not consensual. So as creepy as it may seem, you know, it's easy to judge. You know, it's not good, but it looks bad for sure. And it is not right, you know. I'm certainly not here to condone it at all. But there were no laws broken. Now, two of the charges, the fourth and fifth charge, they are more serious because in one case, the woman says that she was 14 and that they went further than kissing, even though there was nothing non-consensual. I mean, when she said stop, he stopped and they ended it. And I'm not sure. I mean, you know, who knows what really happened? It's a he said, she said. But even what is known, as kind of as bad as it is, it doesn't actually constitute, from what I can tell, a sexual assault. It comes pretty darn close, and it very well may. And I'm not here to defend it, but I don't think it quite crosses the Rubicon into the realm of a sexual assault. And in the fifth case, you have a woman who came forth with a story that does constitute sexual assault, where he kind of had her locked in his car, even though he stopped when she said stop. And she provided a document as proof. And this document, which has been published and which is available for anyone to see it, the Drudge Report put it on the headline, from all experts who have looked at it and who have discussed it and analyzed it, it appears to have been a forgery. It appears to be on obvious cases. Now, I'm not an expert on that. You can check that out yourself. But the case of this being a forgery is quite convincing, and it's been stated as such across the board. The woman is represented by Gloria Allred, who is a very unscrupulous lawyer by reputation, who is highly political and who is the type that takes on any, it's like Al Sharpton. I mean, she'll take on any case that fits her political agenda and runs with it. So it has the earmarkings of a setup, I would suggest. Now, again, I'm not saying this because I don't have any inside information, but the forged nature of it, the other woman who says she was 14, who apparently had some questionable character issues in her life, over the 40 years since, and the other three women who were consensual and legal. To my way of thinking, the fact that this is coming out 1 month before a special election, after 40 years where Roy Moore had been very vetted, he had run for office many times. I mean, apparently the judge in Alabama is elected. For this to come out now, and with the kind of enemies that Roy Moore has, not just amongst the Democrats, but more so amongst the establishment Republicans who do not want to cooperate with President Trump, who want to stop Trump more than the Democrats, who want to thwart his agenda, which he was elected on, you know, his tax cuts, his wall on the border, his rescinding of Obamacare, and his, you know, general America First nationalist stance. They want to stop Roy Moore more than even the Democrats do, and they're willing to play hardball. And I think that maybe they were behind this, what I would suggest is a high-tech lynching of an uppity conservative. The fact that the Washington Post went down to Alabama and they dug this up because one person who is not named met with their reporter and gave them the names and the phone numbers and the contact information of all four of these women. I don't know about the fifth one. I think that was, she came later. When, you know, it was very coordinated. Who had that information? I mean, if this was not something that had ever come out up until then, that combined with the fact that this is coming out now and the forgery part, the possible forgery and all the rest. I mean, to my way of thinking, even if this stuff was true across the board, it is still a high-tech lynching of an uppity conservative. This is an establishment effort to destroy Roy Moore. They do not want Roy Moore in the Congress. And they're going to take whatever measure they can to stop him from getting there. And that's what this is about. That's what it was about for Clarence Thomas, too, by the way, back in the Supreme Court hearings in 1991, whatever that was. The sexual past of a conservative is something that is magnified, whereas the sexual past of a liberal is excused and is avoided. It's not, you know, it's a right-wing conspiracy if we bring that up. It's brought up by a bunch of Christian nuts. Because what do they care? Plus, the fact is we don't hold those people up to the same standards anyways. We don't expect anything from them in terms of any sort of basic moral standard. They're not expected to be moral. I mean, did anyone expect Bill Clinton to behave morally? I mean, really, right? But if you have somebody who's a professing Christian, then, yeah, they are held to a higher standard, and that's probably rightfully. But when they do commit a sin, or if they do commit impropriety, they're completely destroyed over it. And by the way, as a Christian and as a confessing Christian, Roy Moore put this behind him, at least as far as we know, and he sought forgiveness. He confessed, and he sought absolution for his foibles and his crimes, which, you know, were what they were. I'm not going to say they're not serious. They were. They certainly are immoral. I don't think it's moral to be cavorting with teenage girls. I mean, it's just not. And I think it's creepy and it's strange. I'm only mentioning it because, as a conservative, this is magnified for him. Whereas with Clinton, it was suppressed. And his those who brought it up were attacked. And the same people who did the attacking in the case of Bill Clinton are those who are now standing up on their high horses. You can hear them on MSNBC and on progressive radio and even on the mainstream media. Suddenly they've discovered, you know, the Bible, and they're like, oh, this is so immoral, and you know, they're like in it. It's as if they're you know, they're going into a high state of morality. It's also interesting to me that you've had several whispers around the edges, I guess you might say, lately, of throwing the Clintons under the bus. There's been the use of the term reckoning, unquote, on several sources. This seems to be the latest meme coming out of the left. There's going to have to be a reckoning with the Clintons for Bill Clinton's, you know, atrocious behavior. And probable, I mean, there's been accusations even recently of his being involved with a pedophile ring. I'm not going to get into it, and I'm not here to state it, but there was that Epstein, that convicted pedophile, that Clinton on several occasions went to his island, his private island in the Caribbean, where, you know, you have young girls and boys that are there as prostitutes, I suppose, or whatever. And Bill Clinton has visited that island several times. I mean, that's a matter of public record. What was he doing there? In one case, he told the Secret Service to stay away, and he was going to go alone. Even possibly more than one case. The point I'm making is that now the left is suddenly, after 25 years of covering up for the Clintons, they're going to have a reckoning over Bill Clinton? Really? It's because Clinton, and this is, what can we learn from this? I mean, first of all, the reckoning might be on two fronts. The greed front, the improprieties around the Clinton Foundation, but which I think they're going to still protect because there's a lot going on with that that could really come back to bite. But the more important thing they're going after Clinton on now is the moral behaviors, the lack of morality. And they're suddenly saying, okay, we're going to listen to Juanita Broderick. We're going to listen to Kathleen Willey. Even though these women had been vilified for decades because of their accusations, which are, by the way, much more serious and have much more legitimacy and have been around a lot longer than the accusations against Roy Moore, which are suddenly coming out of nowhere after 40 years of silence. I mean, these women were making these accusations from day one, and they were attacked. And the chief attack dog was Hillary Clinton, the chief, enabler of Bill Clinton was Hillary. She was in charge of the so-called bimbo eruptions while he was running for president. She was the one that went out after the Monica Lewinsky scandal. And Monica Lewinsky, yeah, that was consensual. She was legally of age, but it was pretty sleazy. She was an intern in the White House. She's the one that went out on the media and said, oh, this is part of a vast right-wing conspiracy, right? Don't pay any attention. She was the one who was asked recently about it, and she said, oh, that was litigated, quote-unquote, many decades ago, which it wasn't, but that's beside the point. But now, to gain perhaps some semblance of legitimacy, some semblance of a foundation by which they can attack their opponents on these issues, you've got some left-wingers going out and saying there's going to have to be a reckoning. Yeah, a reckoning. Now that the Clintons, after all these decades, are no longer useful to them, they're no longer tools of the left, they no longer need them, right? Clinton served his time. Hillary was defeated twice. She's not coming back. I think that Donna Brazile shot the last bullet into the Clintons. They're not coming back. They're dead politically. And so they're throwing them under the bus. They are having their reckoning because they don't need them anymore. It kind of reminds me, I remember when Ronald Reagan, who was despised by the left and feared throughout his presidency and before and after, you know, he threatened the whole left-wing edifice, just like Donald Trump does now, by actually, like, lowering taxes and seeing that people aren't going to be starving on the streets, but in fact the economy got better. And that everyone was better off, including the most needy. That was a horror show for the left. It threatened to wake up the country to their really despicable self-serving agenda, right? And so they were attacking Reagan, and he was stupid, and they had the funny cartoons by Jerry Trudeau, who showed Reagan's brain. I remember that. And just all of it. Not as mean and as unfunny as the attacks on Trump are now, which is unprecedented. But a drumbeat, a constant attack, until Reagan was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease at an older age, and Bill Clinton was in the White House. All of a sudden, they rehabilitated Reagan. Oh, he wasn't that bad. We admire some things about old Reagan, right? Suddenly. Of course, he was no longer a threat. He no longer had his full faculties. And so he no longer could really speak for himself. And thus they could then step in and say, you see, we're balanced. You know, we can support this. And that's what's going on with the Clintons in reverse. It's kind of a converse in that now they can say, oh, we condemn the Clintons. We condemn Bill for his sleazy behavior, because now they're no longer any use to them. They've served their purpose. They're no longer tools that can be used to promote their socialistic agenda. I mean, they've gone on to find new tools. Now they can throw them under the bus. I mean, I suppose it's a cautionary tale for people on the left who might think, hey, this could happen to me. You know, this is something that I might, in the future, be thrown away like an old used banana peel if I'm no longer of use. Look what they do to poor Michael Dukakis, right? It's like he doesn't even exist. He was the Democratic nominee in 1998. I mean, I don't mean to pick a bone here, but Donna Brazile, you know, in her biography and in her book and in how she's introduced, her political career, they have it. It started with the Clintons. She was working for Dukakis. They don't mention this, right? It's like it didn't happen. Because he was a loser, because he lost so badly, nobody wants to remember him. He's kind of delegated to the sidelines and not even mentioned. I mean, when John Kerry, I don't mean to harp on it, but what the heck. In 2004, when John Kerry had his Democratic National Convention nomination for the presidency in Boston, he didn't invite Dukakis, who lived around the corner, basically, from that venue. And he didn't mention Dukakis in his biography and the fact that he had served Dukakis as lieutenant governor of Massachusetts. He didn't even mention this. It was like not even, you know, it's as if it didn't happen, because nobody wants to be associated with a loser. Okay, I get that. But with Clinton, it's much worse. Now, do conservatives do this also? Yes, they do. So occasionally. But there's a difference. I mean, it's, first of all, it's not as extreme. And secondly, it's an exception. It's not the rule. I mean, every politician to an extent does it. We all do it in life. But it's not a systemic thing. It's not something that's a given. And it's not like a reversal. It's not a self-serving thing in the broad sense, which is the case with suddenly now Clinton's being reckoned with. Now they think they can speak with a moral authority when they point a finger at Roy Moore. Why? Because they've denounced Clinton. Now they've denounced Clinton. How interesting. Anyway, I would describe the situation with Roy Moore as a high-tech lynching of an uppity conservative. He represents a set of ideals that the people of Alabama support, or at least they did support, even if they're not going to support him. And it is really a crisis to me. It's sad to me that he would be destroyed like this. You know, it worries me in terms of the advancement of our democratic system. And I particularly find it really troubling that members of the Republican Party in Congress have said that if Roy Moore wins the election, he won't be seated. Hello? I mean, is this a banana republic? If he's elected, he's seated. That's how our system works. That's how our Constitution works. It doesn't matter if he's elected in prison. If he's elected and he's a citizen and he can vote and he's of age and he fits the qualifications and he's not, you know, he's not convicted of a crime, I suppose. And even then, I think you'd still have to seat him. Then he's seated because he's elected. That's the will of the people. Right? I mean, I don't know about on a national level. I mean, here in Boston, James Michael Curley was elected mayor while he was in prison. I mean, that's how the system works. People are willing to overlook personal foibles sometimes because a candidate represents their particular will, their point of view, their agenda, and will bring that representation to the Congress so that the people's great hall of the people. I mean, that's why Bill Clinton was popular after his accusations, because people supported his agenda. I understand that. You know, I mean, that's how the system works. And in that regard, you know, my hope is that, you know, as difficult as it is, and it certainly is going to take a major gulp, the people of Alabama vote for Roy Moore, even with these things coming out. They vote for him because, as a person, he has not done these things. He's a clean record going for the past 40 years. He has... I mean, I would like to see him show some remorse, maybe. Maybe some sense that, you know, I'm sorry about this. It was not appropriate for me to date young girls. I'd like to hear him say that, even though I did nothing wrong. You know, to use at least the old corporate answer to these things. I didn't do it, and I shall continue not doing it in the future, you know. And to show some humility, but I suppose that in today's political atmosphere, you know, you can't. It's kind of like a, you know, you can't admit you're wrong. I understood it actually when Bill Clinton would not admit that he had done anything wrong, because if you do, then, you know, you're finished. Let me just see if I can reset my password. This is like, I don't know, it worked. It worked last week, but let me just, oh, I think I see what's happening. It's all capitalized. It's like weird. Well, let's go like this. I'll just go like this. AIL, sorry about the dead air here. No, you know, you're welcome to call in, of course. I don't want to be accused of anything here, and, you know, already I have troubles. Well, I'll have to email them and tell them that my password didn't work. Okay, let me just see. All right. Let's see. 4@ I'm going to give it one more try. You know, they'll look for any excuse to get me off the air here, so it's a problem. And let's see. There we go. No. Okay. So it's not working. All right. I'll just have to email them and tell them I couldn't get it to work. So those are my thoughts on the Roy Moore thing. It's really, you know, an attempt to stop a conservative voice. I mean, if Roy Moore is elected, it's going to be a very major blow to the establishment. And as such, they want to stop him. You know, that's what this comes down to. I mean, so they're going to put him under a microscope and try to stir up people's anger at him. You know, people are saying, you cannot support this. I mean, how can you? I mean, every woman has to be believed and all of it. And what about the charges that are going on? I mean, the attacks on women and the sexual assaults that appear almost epidemic right now. I'm going to comment a little bit on that. First of all, one of the mantras, if you will, about this is that this has always happened all the time, and that this is nothing new. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not a woman who's in an office. You know, I don't see it personally. And I think that it remains to be seen whether that's true. My contention and my suspicion is that that is not true. That most men don't do this. It's actually a very small minority of men who do it. And that it's also not true that men who are seeking power and influence would do this. Now, yes, I think it is true that men who do it are men who are inclined to seek power in a corrupt way and in a perverse way and in an unfair way. But that doesn't mean that all men, and for that matter, all women who are seeking power are doing this. Most of them are not doing this. Most of them are honest people. I don't know. I mean, look, I've worked in offices over the years. I haven't seen this. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Maybe it didn't happen in front of me because people know that I'm kind of a bit on the straight-laced side of things. It's not my particular interest to be involved with harassing people sexually and coercing anyone and forcing myself on people. So maybe I don't see it. But my sense is that this isn't usual. This isn't something that happens pervasively. I think what happens is that in certain organizations, you have the development of a culture of corruption where someone is involved in this sort of thing and they are given a pass. The people look the other way, may even be condoned at a certain indirect level. And so it becomes like a phenomena of groupthink, that the message goes out to people that this is okay, that it might even be kind of cool. And so you have organizations that are infected by this. It's kind of like a disease that sets in to the body of an organization. It's kind of the way communists used to work. You know, they'd come in and they would infiltrate and then they would pervert an organization with their ideas in a very subtle way. And eventually their ideas would become accepted and the water would change, the atmosphere would change. Maybe that's how this works. You know, the corruption of an organization or even an entire area. I think that's what's happened to Hollywood. You know, you have there purveyors of the sexual revolution, if there ever was one. You know, they have the movies that promote this, and they push the envelope on sexuality publicly and visually by showing more and more sex on the screen. And so it shouldn't surprise anyone that this is a culture that off the screen condones sexual impropriety. I mean, that's the whole business of it. And so it becomes an accepted thing, even something that was joked about in the case of Harvey Weinstein. And it becomes a subtle form of corruption by which there is a tacit agreement to say nothing. And it's almost like they exist in an alternative universe. This is how you can have a phenomena like Ashley Judd make an out-of-court settlement with Harvey Weinstein, who, I guess, assaulted her sexually as she was coming up in the movie industry. She still comes up in the movie industry. And then she leads a march on a woman's march the day after President Trump's inaugural, where she talks about women's rights and how disgusting Trump was for making those awful comments at the Billy Bush interview, which were private, by the way. You know, so she can do that while knowing full well what's going on in her own industry in Hollywood and doing nothing about it and covering up. Then you have Meryl Streep giving that high-minded speech at some silly award ceremony about how Donald Trump, just with this, it's almost like, you know, Moses coming down from the mountain with the tablets. I mean, the rightness, the righteousness of it. Meanwhile, she refers to Harvey Weinstein as God in an award ceremony, and she probably, I don't think it's a stretch to suggest that she knew all about what was going on in Hollywood for decades, going all the way back. Probably participated in it. And yet she knows nothing. It's like Sergeant Schultz at Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing. I see nothing. I hear nothing. It's because of this culture of corruption. And because, in maybe the deeper sense, illicit sexuality is something that can be used as a power. You know, it's a very powerful force, as anyone alive knows, sexuality, that is. It's extremely alluring. It's very difficult to constrain it and to tame it in ourselves. That's why we have marriage. That's why we have, you know, morals. That's why we have a Bible. That's why we have a moral code, because we need to and want to. We need reason. You know, you use your mind. You use your sense of propriety to restrain your behavior. They want to promote unrestrained behavior because they know that if morals are loosened in a society and if people are allowed to express their passions however they think right, then that's a society that can be controlled, right? It's an addiction. That's a society that's addicted. It's like drugs. A society that's hooked on drugs, which is a very alluring thing, is a society that can be controlled. And that's what they're all about, controlling people. That's what socialism is, public ownership of the means of production. And at its core, it means public ownership of you and of your soul. And the best and easiest way for the society to own you and to own your soul is to corrupt you by getting you off of your constraints that are natural and that are appropriate, and you're, you know, encouraging unlicensed and illicit sexual behavior. I mean, Sigmund Freud, who was one of the founders of this sort of the modern sexual revolution, he coined a phrase called polymorphous perversity, right? What is, as an ideal, polymorphous perversity is sex anywhere, anytime, with anyone, in any situation, as the ultimate virtue, without anything attached to it in terms of morals or sacredness or commitment or love or, you know, fidelity or loyalty or anything else. Just the physical act was the virtue. And that an unbridled sense of this was the ultimate virtue. And that to disagree with that or to suppress that is what the word Freud uses, suppression, was psychologically damaging, was in other words, there was something wrong with you if you didn't indulge yourself in that way. Now, this is the agenda, perhaps subconsciously, perhaps unwittingly, but quietly, that is promoted by the purveyors of the sexual revolution, who are now being criticized. People like Harvey Weinstein, people like Ben Affleck, people like and all the people that covered up for these people, these degenerates, frankly, you know, and people who tried to suppress this in the media. And these are the same people who supported left-wing and liberal causes. I mean, Harvey Weinstein, I mean, was a huge contributor to left-wing causes going back decades. That's why he was able to do this. Ben Affleck, big left-winger, right? Kevin Spacey or any of these other people. That's why they could do it, because they were not... I mean, if they were Roy Moore... oh, my God. I mean, they would have been hanging from the dungeon a long time ago from their toenails. But they were able to get away with it for decades because they were part of this corrupt establishment that is promoting these behaviors for the rest of us. They personally got caught up in it, and probably there's a sense, oh, well, you shouldn't have, because this is not for us. This is for them. But... not the condemnation of them is not really in any sense of actual morality, that there was anything wrong with anything they did, because they don't really think there was. It has more to do with a situational attack. It gets back to what I was saying about the Clintons. They're throwing them under the bus now. Suddenly they're having a reckoning. Why? Because sexuality is a weapon that they can use against their opponents. And in order to keep that weapon sharp and keep it functioning, they have to throw somebody under the bus every so often just to remind everybody that they're on the right side. So they wait till someone is no more use to them. Now, I think the Harvey Weinstein thing, they probably didn't want that to happen because it kind of blew up in their face. But nevertheless, now they're containing it. Now they just had an award ceremony, for example, where, you know, they're constantly giving each other awards. For what? So they could go on a movie and pretend that they're somebody? I mean, why is this such a rewarded? I mean, well, let's put that aside. But, you know, they had Dustin Hoffman, who's been accused now, speaking at the ceremony and smiling and waving and applauds, and everybody dressed in fancy clothes. Nothing said about anything. I wonder how they're going to handle the Oscars this year. Do you think they're going to talk about any of this? Not if they can avoid it. They'll completely pretend as if nothing happened. And so the rest of us who are influenced by this libertine agenda, and who may at times, from time to time, backslide and commit improprieties, we're the ones who are held up like Roy Moore is being held up right now because of a few indiscretions 40 years ago. Suddenly his career and his life is destroyed by people who are shrieking in outrage, the very self-same people who have been the primary purveyors of the very same agenda that influenced Roy Moore way back when. It's a sad thing, you know, to me. It's a sad phenomena. And there's no easy answer to it other than to try to get back to an understanding that while we ought to maintain conventional Judeo-Christian moral standards, at the same time we need to forgive each other when we sin, because we are sinners. I mean, we live in an imperfect world, and we are imperfect people. We're humans. You know, we're flesh and blood. And we should be judged both in this life and in the afterlife. And that these things are a matter of degrees. We put it into proportion. You know, I mean, I think it was Jesus who was purported to have said, "He who has not sinned shall cast the first stone." Right? But then go ahead and sin no more, he said to the prostitute. People forget that part. I think that in the case of the Clintons and others, they didn't get that piece of it. You know, they continued to sin. They continued right up till today to have a sense that the conventional laws of morality and the conventional laws of our politics and of our political system don't apply to them. I suppose that gets into the second half of the denouement of the Clintons. The first half being the moral half, the second half being the political and personal half, which is that they were out for money. You know, they're out for their power. Right from the time when he was governor of Arkansas, right up till today, the Clintons have enriched themselves. They're worth $250 million, apparently. I mean, it goes back with them to Whitewater and to the cattle futures, turning $1,000 into $100,000. I mean, they started pretty early. And they worked it right up till the White House when Clinton, putting aside the selling of the Lincoln bedroom and the grave plots at Arlington National Cemetery, more seriously. And this was really the big scandal of the Clinton era. Not the personal stuff, which is bad enough. But they were essentially selling national security secrets to the Chinese in exchange for money. Right? They sold the Chinese the technology that allowed China to create the modern military machine they have now, using American secrets in exchange for money. There's a lot of documentation on this. The China Gate, they called it. The whole thing was overshadowed by the Monica Lewinsky scandal, which was very minor, certainly, in comparison, which isn't something that hurt the country. It didn't hurt, you know, I mean, our national security. And they continued to do it after they left the White House with Hillary as U.S. Senator. They set up the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative, which was slush funds where money could be contributed. That's what this whole Uranium One deal is all about. The Russians contributed about $160 million to the Clinton Foundation, and in exchange, and this is the accusation, that Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, led the effort to allow Russia to buy 20% of America's uranium supplies in the Russian attempt to corner the market on uranium. Uranium is used to create nuclear bombs. I mean, this is a national security issue of the magnitude that would make this possibly one of the biggest scandals in American history. Meanwhile, Bill Clinton, as part of the deal, gets to go to Moscow to deliver a speech for $500,000 in cash. Right? I mean, that's a pretty good payday. Now, the defenders are saying, oh, well, they're going to nitpick and go over like with a microscope. Well, this happened on this date, but not on that date. So it happened here, but not there. The New York Times even did an article on this as a way to immunize themselves. They don't know if I think they didn't think it would get this much attention. And it gets into the real problem with them. The sexual stuff is a big problem, of course, culturally and morally. But this is a much more serious matter. This is our national security. This directly affects us. You know, this stuff, the technology that was given to China during the Clinton years, that there's reason to suspect that that made its way to North Korea, which now has nuclear missiles. Why wouldn't it have? How did North Korea get this technology? It didn't just happen overnight. Right? Isn't that a pretty serious national security threat? And by the way, in 2012, Barack Obama's CIA told him that North Korea was now able to fit missiles with nuclear devices. A very ominous development. And Obama responded by doing nothing and by maintaining it, keeping it classified. I don't know why that is. That's another subject. But since we're reaching toward the end of the program, I'm going to wrap things up here. And I was not able to sign on, so I'm going to have to email the manager and explain that, and will. Let me just say that I should mention, since we're at the end of the program, that of course my columns are available, and this is a nonprofit thing, so I won't be accused of trying to make a buck here. My columns are available at newsmax.com. My podcast is available at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. And my books are available at Amazon.com. My most recent book The History of American Assassinations. I'm not sure if that's something that will be published. I'll probably know by the end of the year, but I did 31 cases of suspected assassination and assassination in America. The obvious ones, obviously, were assassinations like Kennedy and Lincoln and James Garfield and McKinley. But I also look at assassination plots or alleged assassination plots and possible assassinations where a public official died under serious, mysterious circumstances, questionable circumstances, and whether or not that was an assassination. And I have to tell you, it was very interesting research. It took me about a year to write this book. It was a great insight into American history. And I really enjoyed it. So I'll keep you all posted in terms of if and when that's published. I shall return.